Exertion number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel 20.
Colonel W.A. Waitman, Reel 20. What did security responsibilities really mean to you, Colonel?
Very bread and butter work, really. Key points. Patrolling to make sure that there's no civil unrest or banditry, for which Malaya is famous, and then we got down to routine training and established a training camp on the southwest corner of the island, not all that far from Tenga RAF airfield. In early January 1946, the Dutch troops, which had been intended to reoccupy the Netherlands, East Indies, Java, Sumatra, and the adjacent islands, were based in Malaya, and it was decided to attach British training teams to them to give them experience and training of jungle warfare, pending the political decision to allow them to go back and reoccupy the Netherlands East Indies. So, in mid-January 1946, myself and a dozen of my picked men from C Company, 2DLI, went by rail from Singapore to Seremban in Negri Sembilan State in mid-Malaya, and thence by road to Port Dickson on the west coast. There, in a pre-war barracks, we joined the 3rd Battalion of the Regiment Stoutroepen, Stoutroepen meaning stormtrooper in Dutch, of the Royal Netherlands Army. We gave them demonstrations of infantry section tactics and patrolling. On the lighter side, a tiger was active in the overgrown rubber plantations nearby, and we heard on the local grapevine that 3 tappers clearing the overgrown, commencing to clear the overgrown rubber plantations at Port Dickson, sort of prosperous rubber growing area, had been killed by a tiger turned man eater. So, in conjunction with a Dutch officer, we organised tiger drives. Sad to say, we never saw the tiger, and I began to think that there was a great deal of mystery about this. And the Singhalese dresser, the first aid man from the particular plantation that we were sweeping, whenever he could see my interest waning, would say, "Tiger coming, sir. I can smell him. I can smell him," to try to boost my interest. And although we tried jolly hard, we never saw one or smelt one. One evening I went out pig shooting with 2 Dutch officers, and we were going up a spur onto the top of a ridge when we heard a rustle on our left, and I spotted a pig, babi in Malay, just getting up from his afternoon snooze. As I was taking aim, one of the Dutchmen moved, and the pig was off like a doe's assault, so I fired 2 shots at him and both missed. But had that colleague in front of me, the 2 in front, not moved, I'd have had a pig in the pot and in the game book. A few weeks later, this battalion moved from Port Dickson in Negri's Mbilan State and moved further north to another camp 18 miles from Kuala Lumpur in Selangor State. The camp was based in a pre-war sanatorium. There were small geysers in the area, and hot water came out of the ground with a sulphur content, and it was obviously very good for healing. And the camp was based at the village of Dusuntua, D-U-S-U-N-T-U-A. And again, we did extensive exercises in the surrounding jungles. The rubber plantations themselves in this area were also overgrown, as they were throughout the whole of the Malayan Peninsula during the Japanese occupation. Only parts had been cultivated, and the rubber tapped. One of the tricky things we had to look out for on our exercise in the jungle was Chinese pig traps. They dig a large hole, make it bell-shaped, sometimes put bamboo stakes in the bottom, which we call punjis, and we were taught to do this for man traps ourselves. Cover the top lightly with brushwood and leaves, and when they dig this on a known pig track or footpath, the pig goes down and the Chinese then come along, kill him, and take him off for butchering and cutting up. We had to be very, very careful for chaps falling down. And I remember once almost doing it myself when a Dutch officer stuck his hand out and grabbed me. We left a soldier to warn the column coming behind us. But after several people passed him, he got tired and didn't want to be left behind and left his post. And we were still within earshot when we heard a shriek as a Dutch soldier went down this pig trap. On another exercise, a Dutch officer went down one. Fortunately, the ones that the chaps went down hadn't got punjis in the bottom. And this particular chap, on being dragged out, said, "Well, that's the first and last time I'd do that." He hadn't gone 100 yards before he went down another. The Dutch troops, the NCOs and soldiers in particular, were young, keen, and very, very fit. But I can't say the same thing about their officer corps. Their major was an excellent man, the battalion commander, Major Jan Breun, who I affectionately nicknamed the Iron Man. Some of his officers were far too old and totally inexperienced. They had two Netherlands East Indies officers with them, Captain Varsch and Captain Jan Volterbeek, both of whom had been prisoners of war or interned by the Japanese during their occupation of Java. Varsch was a bitter old, red-faced, typical pre-war colonial type. Volterbeek was young, athletic, youngish, athletic, and a very keen jungle waller. Varsch talked about it, but I never actually saw him go in the jungle. Jan did. Once we had to almost mount a search for him, and well, we did actually set it in motion as he hadn't returned from the jungle. And when we hadn't gone very, very far into the jungle in various tracks, when he came whistling down one of them with his rifle slung over his shoulder. And I'm jolly pleased to say that over the years, Jan finished up as a major general in the Royal Netherlands Army. Some of the officers were, of course, experienced in the underground organisation in Holland. One, an ex-policeman, Captain Crantjes, was a particularly impressive, vigorous officer, always leading from the front. But some of the older ones should not have been there in a regiment of stormtroops, Stoutroepen. They should have been chairborne somewhere within the command structure of the Dutch forces. But the men were fit, keen, and energetic and just longing to get back on troop ship over to the East Indies to sort out the Indonesian problem and the TRI in particular.
Did your men get on pretty well with them?
Yes, because they had been based in England. After leaving Holland, they spent some time at Wokingham in Berkshire, and of course had learnt quite a few had learned English at school. They'd met the Allied forces, particularly Montgomery's 21 Army Group, moving up the through the Low Countries, Belgium and Holland, and reoccupying the Netherlands, and had seen them in action from Valkeren Island to mainland Holland. Bruin was a man who, again, I kept in touch with for a short while after the war, and a Lieutenant Lye Storms. Like our Durham, many of whom were from Geordie mining families, some of the toughest of the Stowtroopers came from the Dutch coal mining province of Limburg. And it was significant that prior to a function, whether it was a play or a semi-formal, because we were just in our jungle kit, a meal and a drink, if it was semi-official, the Limburgers would sing their own anthem, "The Limburg is my fatherland," as well as the Dutch national anthem, the Wilhelmus. But they were jolly, on the whole, by and large, just with three or four exceptions, they were a splendid bunch of Dutch troops. Again, I corresponded with them, some of them, after the war, including during the time when they were on operations and fighting in Indonesia, and Sumatra in particular. When the 3rd Battalion left us in tour, I then moved back to Port Dickson to the 1st Battalion, Stowtroopers. And then when they moved to Port Swettenham for trooping, going by landing craft over to Indonesia, I returned with my training team to the DLI and spent the end of February at Singapore Chinese High Schools. The battalion had moved from Johor Bahru into the Chinese High Schools on the Bucket Timah Road in Singapore. I was fortunate there to meet up with my friend Captain Alan Clifton, with whom I'd gone racing in Pune, and we shared a room, and as he was a grazier and I was a farmer's son, the sheep farmer and the dairy farmer's son had quite a bit in common. We also had half a dozen Japanese horses with three Japanese soldiers to look after them. Alan wanted them properly turned out, and as the Japanese army trousers are just baggy things with long putties, he got the tailor, the Indian Dersey, to run them up a set of jodhpurs each. Some person not so favourably disposed said to Alan one day in the mess, "What do you want to get breeches made for those bastards for?" And being a real horseman, Alan replied, "I'm having them properly kitted out of respect for the horses." And I've remembered that quotation for the rest of my equestrian days, and sometimes quoted it when I've seen people turned out looking like a heap.
Can I ask you the composition of the battalion now? Because obviously a lot of men have gone home. Are they still regulars that are coming in, or are you getting any short-term people?
The bulk, probably 60% of the battalion, had gone home from Rangoon via India, Secunderabad rear details, and then homewards. And we reformed, as I said in an earlier discussion, at Yeruli Camp Pune. In Singapore, again, we got reinforcements coming through, and some of these were absolutely as green as grass. They hadn't had a thorough good grounding of infantry training for whatever reason in the UK before they left. And we got one or two malcontents and Bolshie beggars. So we really had to tighten up on the discipline. And the command structure was weak at NCO and warrant officer level because of inexperience. With the experienced men gone, youngsters coming in, they achieved rapid promotion simply because there was no one else, and some were promoted grossly above their level of competence. Not that age is always a criteria. This actually proved a blessing in disguise in some ways, because one of my close chums in C Company, albeit a different platoon, Corporal Wilde from Sunderland, had gone home on the same lie-up that I went on, lie-up 12 from Rangoon on the 24th of July, 45, arrived back and was soon promoted sergeant. He was with us on the Sumatra trip as a sergeant, and he became a company sergeant major. And from being a very quiet, reserved corporal, he became a fire-eating sergeant major. And he and A Company commander, Major Tinkham, Captain Clifton, myself, really got stuck in to our subunits.
Was this affecting the overall efficiency of the battalion?
No, because we weren't put to any real big test. But had we been put to a test, it might well have done. But we were mainly doing guard duties on docks and key points in the harbour area and in the city of Singapore. The five Japanese horses were very useful amenity, and I was able to ride out there in the company of Captain Clifton and two ladies from the First Aid Nursing Yeomanry Unit, small group of First Aid Nursing Yeomanry fannies, one of whom was a splendid rider, her husband being an artillery officer in Singapore at the same time, and in civilian life he was a racehorse trainer in County Cork.
Were the men National Service, or were they regulars, these young men that were coming to you?
Emergency. National Service had not yet come in, so we were all emergency. D of E, duration of emergency, were our terms of reference. And that could have been anything from 5 years to whatever. At that time, I was fortunate in going to the regular commission selection board for 3 days, which was based at Changi. And thanks to, although I didn't know at the time, a very good write-up from Colonel Waterhouse, my sir in Burma, I passed the regular army selection board and was commissioned regular officer as from 30 September 1945, later on that year, I beg your pardon, 1946, later on that year, in my county regiment, the Durham Light Infantry.
With the rank of?
Lieutenant.
Had this been a decision that you'd come to yourself, that you wanted to become a regular?
Yes. When I was on my leave in September, October 1945, the Lambton Estates, Earl of Durham's estate agent, the late A.J. Gray, offered me the tenancy of the three farms at Middle Harrington at £1,000 a year. But my main interest and concern was the army. And I wrote and thanked him for the kind offer to be the third generation on the farm. And I preferred the faithful Durhams. The sword instead of the ploughshare, one might say. And all in all, at the end of the day, whilst it might not have been a great decision financially, from the point of view of my personal interest, dedication, vocation and pride, I preferred the Durhamite infantry to anything else, and the British Army, of course. On the 1st of March 1946, I was posted from the DLI to be instructor at the Malaya Command Training Centre, which was being formed at Dusun Tur, 18 miles from Kuala Lumpur, where I had been earlier with the 3rd Battalion of the Regiment Stowtroopen at the pre-war hospital. And naturally, this was to be an instructor in jungle warfare, and I was promoted captain with effect from the 1st of March 1946. We spent some while preparing for the first course, and there would be an officer wing and an NCO wing.